The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
You gotta understand something here. This music is the glue of the world. It holds it all together. Without this, life would be meaningless.
What are you getting so crazy about? It's just music.
Welcome to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. I'm Jim DeRogatis, the pop music critic at the Chicago Sun-Times.
And I'm Greg Kot. I write about rock and roll for the Chicago Tribune. Today on the world's only rock and roll talk show, a bunch of new albums out there, and we're excited to talk about some new music.
Absolutely, Greg. T.I. is probably going to debut at number one next week, much anticipated hip-hop release. Plus, we've got new ones from cult favorites such as Queens of the Stone Age, Spoon, and Crowded House.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and time now to welcome our newest affiliate.
Greg, people may hear that voice. It's Morris Day of the time, and think of Minneapolis, because, of course, Morris went to high school there, and he met Prince there, part of that key scene in the 80s in the Twin Cities. But Morris Day was born and raised in Springfield, Illinois, and we're playing him because we're welcoming WUIS at the University of Illinois at Springfield that's going to start airing us now.
Absolutely. Thank you, WUIS in Springfield. We're glad to be on your programming calendar.
Greg, that is a song called Pump Up the Volume from the second album by the British quintet Art Brut. It's called It's a Bit Complicated.
We're taking our clothes off. In the order. And you're leaving your shoes on to make you look taller. And I can't say I'm not enjoying the kissing, but I have a sneaky suspicion that you're not really listening. Is it so wrong to break from your kiss to turn up a pop song? I know I should, and it's possibly wrong to break from your kiss to turn up a pop song. I'm taking it slowly.
Eddie Argos, the leader of that band, singing about being such a music obsessive that he breaks off a kiss to turn up a pop song. I don't know. Can we relate to that? We fell in love with this band out of the UK. It made its debut in 2005 with a record called Bang Bang Rock and Roll. Didn't get released officially in the US until last year. Made both of our top 10 lists at the end of the year, and they came on the show, and we greatly enjoyed having them. However, if this record sucks, we will be harsh on it in the review portion. Eddie Argos can't sing, and isn't much of a looker. He'll be the first to admit both of those facts. And yet he wanted to form a band, and he did. And there's this cartoonish quality that we fell in love with on the first album where he's basically singing about, I have no talent, but I'm in a band. And you should be too. Everybody should start a band. To me, it's as if the entire spirit of Nick Hornby's High Fidelity, the novel and the movie that followed, or everything Lester Bangs ever wrote, has been reincarnated in the persona of this one guy, Eddie Argos, who is doing it, can't believe he's doing it, admits he has no talent, and yet he's in a band just because he wanted to and he couldn't imagine not doing it. I love that. The question, I think, on the sophomore album is, was it one joke? You know, where do you go on album number two? Let's play a song from It's a Bit Complicated by Art Brut, an ironic title because many people would say there was nothing complicated about there. It was all, you know, right there and obvious on the first album. Let's see if they've grown. We're going to play a song called Post Soothing Out.
It's just like starting over. We try so hard, but we keep on falling over. Every day. It's just like starting over. We try so hard, but we keep on falling over. Every day. It's just like starting over. We try so hard, but we keep on falling over. Flashback. We both used our cards for cashback. Halfway to explain why my pockets are full of change. And every day it's just like starting over. We try so hard, but we keep on falling over. Every day it's just like starting over. We try so hard, but we keep on falling over. Every day it's just like starting over. We try so hard, but we keep on falling over. River deep and mountain high, there's some lyrics that'll never apply. Cause I don't lie awake at night with thoughts of river depth or mountain height.
Post Soothing Out from Art Brut's second album, It's a Bit Complicated. Key line in that record: we try so hard, but we keep on falling over. If that is not every schlub right there in Eddie Argos' voice in that one line, that explains his entire outlook on life. He keeps trying and he's trying, but he never quite gets where he wants to be.
It's true.
And we love him for it.
Yeah, he actually played that song and gave us a taste of it when they came into the studio.
What's wonderful about this band is that even though a lot of people think that humor is ironic, Argos is totally sincere about this stuff.
Yeah,
I think he means it, and that's what's so endearing about this band. What's amped up on the second album, Jim, in comparison to the first one, it's very similar. It's that scrappy, three-minute song approach, garage-rocky guitars. They've amped up some of the hooks. The vocal harmonies are way up on this record. They've emphasized the melodies with those backing harmonies. Argos is in still fine, self-deprecating form. He tries and he tries to have these solid relationships, and they keep falling apart on him despite his best efforts. Rock and roll is the one salvation in his life. But even rock and roll is a little mischievous in this thing. I mean, okay, you're going to kiss that girl, and you're sort of swayed by that song playing on the radio. And
I
you're
know.
Thinking, well, is that a good thing that you're being saved by the rock and roll song in that
particular
instance?
Well, he's loving the music so much that he can't concentrate on his lover. and that's the thing. You know, I think that this guy's eminently relatable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Any true music geek has a little part of Eddie Argos in them, and he is all of us. Musically, I think you're right. I think that they have stepped up their game. I think this is a great example of Britpop, going back to, you know, when Blur was at its heyday, you know, those kind of hooks. But they still have the garage rock thing. You know, as far as I'm concerned, if the Modern Lovers could have kept putting out albums that had songs as good as Roadrunner. I wouldn't have cared if they put out 50 of them. It's like the Ramones. It's a great formula. Yeah, it's simple. But if you can give me 50 songs as great as Rockaway Beach or Roadrunner, keep them coming.
Yeah.
Argos, I do, you know, he's trying to grow up a little bit. He's trying to look at relationships. I think the song Jealous Guy is a great example where he's in bed with his girlfriend and he wants to wake her up to make love to him just because he's insecure that he can't measure up to the other lovers she's had in the past.
Right.
And because he's so insecure, he's not able to perform. And so it's this vicious circle. And the guy is melting down. But he's laying there in bed next to a beautiful woman. And he's melting down completely out of his own paranoias. It's a wonderful song.
And meanwhile, he's got this other layer going on where he's hearing about these beautiful relationships in these pop songs. You know, he writes a love song to the hiss of the tape and the crackle of the vinyl in Sound of Summer. The Sound of Summer is not the birds and the bees. It's the vinyl crackling and the tape hissing.
Yeah.
And at the same time, he's saying things don't work out the way they get sung. I mean, mm-hmm. That's, to me, the essence of what he's singing about. He's hearing these great pop songs. This is how the life should be. And yet, here's the reality of my life. And it's not so cool.
Hey, this guy's a genius. Maybe it's just because he's a lot like you and me. I don't know. I'm going to admit that right up front. But we rate things here on Buy It, Burn It, Trash It. We're going to be using the scale a lot on this record review show. This is a buy it record. Eddie Argos needs and deserves your money, folks.
They are one of those bands with bang, bang, rock and roll. You thought this could be one of the greatest one-hit wonders of all time. You're thinking, if that's all they give us, it had been worth it. But here they come back with a record that I think is every bit as good as that one.
Absolutely.
It's a bit complicated. Buy it, folks. That is Queens of the Stone Age with a song called Threes and Sevens from their new album, Era Vulgaris. The main songwriter, guitar player, and the brains behind Queens of the Stone Age since its inception in the late 90s, five albums ago, is one Josh Homme. If you go to Europe, apparently it's pronounced Josh Homme, and some people like just call him Homme.
Right.
Homme seems to be the one that we've settled on lately. Josh Homme, 6'7" tall, 250 pounds. He could be playing linebacker in the NFL. He was in a great metal band from the desert country in Southern California in the early 90s called Caius. Out of Caius came Queens of the Stone Age. What was wonderful about Queens of the Stone Age, and still is to a large extent, is they were in some ways satirizing heavy metal and at the same time celebrating it. They derided the heavy testosterone of heavy metal, but at the same time they were playing these big riffs and they were bringing a sensuality to it that I think was missing in metal at the time. That self-titled first Queens of the Stone Age record that came out in 1998 still I think is one of the landmark works of that era in the way it sort of reinvented metal for a new era. This is their fifth record. Let's listen to a track from it before we review it. To my mind, it's one of those tracks where he starts to talk about some of the issues facing this band, because there have been some internal problems within the band. Nick Oliveri, his longtime songwriting partner and friend, was booted out of the band a couple albums ago. To some degree, some people say the band has never been the same since Oliveri left. And we're going to discuss that in a minute, but here's a song where I think he's addressing some of those issues of being in the spotlight and how he's dealing with it. It's called I'm Designer from Queens of the Stone Age on Sound Opinions.
Steady job. How much have you got? My generation don't trust no one. It's hard to blame. Not even ourselves. The thing that's real for us is fortune and fame. All the rest seems like work. It's just like diamonds in a I'm
nice much.
That's Queens of the Stone Age from their fifth album, Era Vulgaris, a song called I'm Designer. Greg, I think it's one of the few standouts for me on this record. It's sort of a sneering, anti-consumerist screed, tapping into that no-logo spirit of Generation Y, which I don't think gets celebrated enough in the era of everybody selling out. Some people, as you alluded to earlier, would say that Josh Homme has sold out. And certainly, I think, since losing Oliveri, it's been a lot like Metallica when it parted ways with its bassist. In some ways, Oliveri was the real metal soul of this group. And since then, we've been getting an increasingly pointless series of celebrity cameos. On their last album, the Queen's last album, Lullabies to Paralyze, we got Billy Gibbons of ZZ Top and Shirley Manson of Garbage. This time, Trent Reznor stops by. Julian Casablancas of The Strokes stops by. Look, it's a great basic sound. You know, you said Desert Rock. It was also a cornerstone band, Caius, of what has come to be called the stoner rock movement. Putting the psychedelia back in heavy metal as it was in the early 70s, really returning to having brains and trippiness in heavy metal along with melody. And I think there's a lot of bands that are doing that today. Certainly we've talked about a lot of them on the show. The Queens did it great. We're second to none on their first three albums. I didn't like Lullabies to Paralyze, and I'm not crazy about Era Vulgaris. I like the song Sick, Sick, Sick. I like Turning on the Screw. I like the song we just played, I'm Designer. And then boy, that's it for me.
Well, I got to tell you, Jim, at first I was a little bit underwhelmed by this record because I wasn't hearing the huge hooks other than for a couple of songs, but after a few listens, it really kicked in for me. I think Josh Homme is a masterful guitar player, and what he brings to the guitar in terms of his tone, the way he plays, it assumes a different voice with almost every song. And the second thing he's a master of is that sexy rhythm. I think one of the things that was missing in metal, one of the things he hated about it, was that it wasn't really sexy anymore. And a lot of metalheads are rejecting Queens of the Stone Age, is even saying it's not a metal band at all. I mean, they were booed at Ozfest in 2000. I don't think that bothers Homme at all. I think he's created kind of a sound that is uniquely his own. And I think this is a return to form. I would say the best albums that they made are the first one and the second to last one, Songs for the Deaf, which did have a number of cameos on it. Mark Lanegan was a vocalist on that record. Dave Grohl was drumming on this record. This one is relatively cameo-free. I mean, Julian Casablancas supposedly sings on this record. I can't figure it out what song he's on and where his vocal presence is. But I think as a showcase for Homme as a great guitar player and a master of those sensual rhythms, I think this is a terrific record. It's one of those records I get lost in, and I would say buy it. It's one of the of the three best Queens records.
I would say go buy everything and anything that High on Fire or Sleep has done well before this record. It's a burn it record. I like those three tracks. I like them a lot. But otherwise, I think Homme's beginning to phone it in.
That is a song that you probably remember if you were listening to radio at all in 1987. That's Don't Dream It's Over. Huge worldwide number one hit for the band Crowded House. We're going to be reviewing their new record coming up next on Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media, along with the new record from rapper T.I.
There's a battle ahead. Many battles are lost, but you'll never see the end of the road while you're traveling with me. Head now.
You're listening to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media.
to keep your hopes alive. So where do I begin to help you believe again?
That is a song called Even a Child, probably the most upbeat tune on Time on Earth, the first new album from Crowded House in 14 years. Who were Crowded House, Greg? As you said, huge hit years ago, number one around the world. They came out of a band called Split Enz. Neil Finn, the guy who put the band together, was born in New Zealand, except he formed the group Crowded House after the end of Split Enz in Melbourne, Australia. There is a cult following for this band, boy. People who love Neil Finn, they just love everything he does, and he can walk on water. In fact, to get a little bit of a taste of what he means in certain quarters, I read some of the reviews, early reviews from this album from the New Zealand and the Australian press, and they are greeting it. In fact, one of them admitted and said, this is the best thing we could imagine, second to a new Beatles album by the actual Beatles, which is hard because the Beatles, you know, half of them are dead, right? In Crowded House, the only one who's dead is the drummer, Paul Hester. He died in 2005, and apparently this album was going to be a Neil Finn solo record, Time on Earth, until, moved by the death of his former bandmate, Finn decided, let's call this Crowded House, and let's get back with bassist Nick Seymour and multi-instrumentalist Mark Hart. Let's put the band back together. Why not? Everybody else is doing it these days. The Police are back. Everybody's back. Nobody stays retired unless they're dead. So now we have new Crowded House music for the first time in a decade and a half. Let's play a song from this album and see what we think about it when we return. This is called She Called Up by Crowded House on Sound Opinions.
She called up. It took us all. Pushed apart the mountains and the tide. It took us all.
Called Up from Crowded House's fifth studio album, Time on Earth, first since 1993, as Jim mentioned. Boy, as soon as I heard that song, I'm thinking Something So Strong, right? Their other, you know, this was not a one-hit wonder, this was a two-hit wonder band. They had the massive hit with Don't Dream It's Over, which was a number one song, and then they had another top 10 hit with Something So Strong in that same year, and that's a pretty much of a direct rewrite of that track. Although you're thinking up-tempo and kind of soulful, but you listen to the lyrics, and clearly, as you mentioned, Jim, the death of drummer Paul Hester weighs heavily on this record, and that you can't help but think, was that the phone call that he got from one of Hester's loved ones saying,
when she,
you know, he found
up,
out that he was dead? And that is by far one of the more up-tempo songs on this record. The rest of it is a very moody, dark, somber, melancholy record. The beautiful melodies are there, but this, for the most part, sounds like a Neil Finn solo record. What did Crowded House actually contribute as a unit to the music-making of Neil Finn? The drumming is so buried in this record, so non-existent, it feels like they could have hired anyone to replace Paul Hester. The bass playing, Nick Seymour's a fine bass player, and you can hear those kind of melodic bass lines in the background, but, you know, it's a very placid, mellow record, and there's not a lot of experimentation on it until later on in the record, where he has some voiceovers from a German airport, where he starts to get a little experimental.
Yeah.
But for the most part, This is exactly the way you would predict it would sound. And I'm trying to think, did I miss a memo somewhere? Was there this big outcry for a Crowded House reunion? Because I don't really understand why they got back together.
Well, probably from and their why accountants. There was a big outcry from their accountants to put the band back together.
And why they made a record that Neil Finn could have easily made on his own.
I don't know, Greg. Call me a heathen. I'm just not perhaps mature enough to appreciate the charm of Neil Finn's songwriting. I didn't like Split Enz. I didn't like Crowded House. I didn't like Neil Finn's solo. It's one of those things. It was too twee and twinkly and prissy and songwriterly for me. You know, I mean, like, I don't know. It was too fussy. You know what I mean? I was like, give me the chills out of New Zealand any day. Give me Flight of the Conchords. That's the best music I'm excited about out of New Zealand today. I didn't want a new Crowded House album, and I greeted this one skeptically. If it was great, fine, but instead I had a really hard time not tuning out. I mean, you know, I kept putting it on when I was doing different things, and it was not holding my attention. I had to listen to this record 6 times, and I still can't hum, you know, more than one or two hooks for you from it. It's a trash it record as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's really dull. And as I said, after that first couple of hit songs for Crowded House, it was kind of downhill for the band. And as I said, I don't hear the groundswell of like, come on, we need another Crowded House record. They're just filling up the air with another kind of really mediocre adult pop record. And Lord knows we don't need more of those. It is a trash it record. That is the rapper T.I. with Big Things Poppin', the first single from his 5th studio record, T.I. vs. T.I.P. This is the biggest selling rapper of 2006. His 2006 release, King, sold 1.5 million copies, by far the biggest hip-hop release of last year. He quickly returns with the follow-up record. Clifford T.I. Harris Jr. from Atlanta has emerged as one of the biggest rappers in the country. Not just the epitome of that Dirty South Atlanta sound, but in competition now with Jay-Z and 50 Cent and Eminem as the preeminent MC of this generation. And he's done it very quickly. This is a guy who's had a very complicated life. In Atlanta, he grew up running drug jobs with his uncle when he was 8 years old. He has been arrested several times on drug and gun charges. Several of his friends have been gunned down. In fact, last year, one of his bodyguards was killed at a nightclub that T.I. was attending. Yet at the same time, now at age 26, he has built a small entertainment empire. He has starred in movies. He was in that movie ATL last year. He's about to star in a movie with Denzel Washington. It's going to be released later this year. He's got a clothing line. He's got a gym shoe line. He owns a record label. He owns a car dealership. He owns nightclubs. This guy does.
Greg, face it. You and I are the only ones who don't have a clothing line.
I'm telling you. And meanwhile, he's had 5 kids. This is an interesting guy. I've talked to him a couple of times. He has a number of children, ranging in age between like 2 and 10. So he's raising these 5 kids. He's got this lavish lifestyle that he's living, and yet he's had this incredibly difficult, crime-ridden childhood. So that sets up this new album, T.I. versus T.I.P. Tip is what he was known as, a young drug dealer. Many of his early songs and several songs on this record deal with his drug-dealing past. T.I. is the businessman that has come up to replace him. So essentially, this album is T.I. and T.I.P. talking to one another, trying to resolve their differences. Let's play a track from it. Help is coming from the new T.I. album, T.I. versus T.I.P. on Sound Opinions.
Help on the way. Help on the way. Say, game in trouble. Help on the way.
Fret not,
hey,
I tell
you. Help on the way. Hey, hey. Help on the way.
I got this.
Help on the way. To say the game in trouble. Help on the way. Hey,
what you worried for?
Help on the way. Hey.
Have I ever let you down before?
I got the game on lock. Y'all standing on top. Say hello to the man who can say help on.
Hey,
hey.
Say hello to the
man who can say help.
Who's single-handedly gonna say help?
Say hello to the man who can say help.
locked up and the records ain't selling. It was bad, no six, getting worse, no sell. Market oversaturated with all the bootlegging. When it's getting better, shout out, ain't no telling. Well, Kylie, you'll get him, then mess with. Then hit Kyle, tell him, tell Kevin. Craig, Julie, Green, while all of them present. That 50 million gave me was a sound investment. Every time around, we gon' sell five, no less than four on a slow day, call to get the bet. Yeah. By the way, if you're a winner, I'm the one you should bet with. Jay, tell him we the wrong nigga to bet again. Grand hustle, homie, I'ma make you respect. They say the market share down, so I ain't a fact. Tell the labor relax, and they don't need to stress shit. Just cut the check, and I had it a risk. They say the game in trouble, help on the way. Don't worry about the help on the way. They say the game in trouble, help on the way. I got this shit on the way. They say the game in trouble, help on the way. Don't worry about the help on the way. They say the game in trouble, help on the way. I got this shit, help on the way. I got the game hold on. I'm standing on top. Tell hello to the man who say help on. I got the game hold on. It ain't gonna stop. Say hello to the man who say help on. I got the game hold on. I'm standing on top. Say hello to the man who say help on. I got the game hold on. It ain't gonna stop. Say hello to the man who say help on.
That is a track called Help Is Coming by T.I. from his fifth album, T.I. versus T.I.P. I was eager to play that one, Greg, because I think it's one of the strangest uses in hip-hop of an organ ever. You've got this thing that's midway between Yes and Deep Purple and T.I. Flowing in his frenetic style over that, really fast, actually. It's not typical Southern sound. He is the self-proclaimed king of the South. I think there is the nugget of a brilliant idea on this album. In that, you know, he's fighting between these two personas, the businessman, as you said, T.I., and the old drug-dealing self, T.I.P. Unfortunately, it's a completely failed opportunity. You know, last week when we did the panel discussion about the state of hip-hop and the use of some words, the N-word, bitches, hoes, and people criticizing that. One thing a couple of listeners said is, well, where were the people defending the use of those words? Yeah, they're pretty vile, but what's the other side of the story? Here's this album's going to debut at number one, and T.I. is offering his response in the person of responding to Oprah, who was one of the most outspoken critics of these words in hip-hop. What does he have to say to Oprah? Hey, you know, the N-word, hoes and bitches, they do exist. I ain't making this up. You know, and it's like, man, what, you know, what are you talking about? You know, it's like, that's the best you can do. You're pandering by using these hateful words that many people find offensive. He's just not doing anything artistic with them. He's just dropping foul words and playing up to cliches. There isn't really a difference between T.I., the modern record mogul and businessman, and T.I., the street businessman who was selling drugs. This could have been a great idea, but I think it's mainly a blown premise.
Yeah, I agree with you to an extent. It's definitely a blown premise. It comes out in three acts. The big problem here is that you've got a couple of stars who need each other. T.I. needs T.I.P. and T.I.P. needs T.I. And they finally get together at the start of Act 3, where they're talking, where T.I. is talking to himself in the mirror. They come together and they have an argument.
You see, if you recall back in trap music,
meet me at the mirror,
problem
man.
Once before.
Come to the mirror, man.
I thought we had this shit under control, though, you know what I'm saying?
Nah, boy, man, I told you I was gonna let you do this shit for a minute.
Man, hold up, man, I'm talking, man.
Man,
you
can't set me up, man. I got it from here on out.
Well, it's kind of a played conceit in hip-hop. I mean, think about Eminem with, you know, Slim Shady and Marshall Mathers. He's got these personas. Puff Daddy, how many pseudonyms has he taken on?
Yeah.
Jay-Z even has taken on numerous pseudonyms over the years. There was a rap record released several years ago by a guy named Cassidy called Split Personality, which essentially did a three-act version of the same thing that T.I. is talking about here. So it's nothing new, but it is interesting because personality, the predominance of personality, is really what hip-hop's all about. The thing is, this album doesn't get interesting until there's the conflict in the third act between these two sides of his persona. And that's where it really gets interesting. As you said, I think the gangsta stuff in Act 1, where he's the tip personality,
yeah,
and the playboy businessman model in Act 2, where he's sort of doing the Southern version of Jay-Z, that's played out. You know, we've heard that so many times, it's become a cliche, but it does get interesting. I think there is a little depth in Act 3. Tell him I said that, respect this hustle, my type. I would burn those tracks and sample what this guy might be capable of. I just wish he'd made an entire album with as much thought and conflict in it and tension as those three tracks bring to the table.
Well, it's tough. Yeah, I do like moments. I love the organ. You know? Mm-hmm. I do. That's a wacky idea to rap over Yes, Organ. But I can't even say it's a burn it. I think it's a trash it record. It's too bad.
Burn the three tracks I mentioned. The rest is pretty disposable. You've heard it all before, including on T.I. albums, the previous four T.I. albums. So you just need those last three tracks. It's a burn it for me. As always, we love to hear from you, our listeners, so give us a call with your opinions about this show or anything else we talk about on Sound Opinions at 1-888-859-1800 or send us an email at interact@soundopinions.org.
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Ah, Greg, that's a little bit of the new Shellac album with Steve Albini ranting about radio, a standout track called The End of Radio. We're going to review that new Shellac album and the new album by Spoon, Gaga, 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 when we come back on Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. Welcome back to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. There's another song from the Chicago trio Shellac from their fourth album called Excellent Italian Greyhound. That track is called Steady As She Goes. Greg, this is not a prolific or particularly timely band. It's been 7 years, amazingly, since the last Shellac album. That's almost half the time that Crowded House was apart, right?
Yeah, exactly. They all have day jobs.
Unbelievable. Well, yes, and that's why they're most famous. Mr. Albini, Steve Albini, leader of this band, is the celebrated recordist. Don't call him a producer or he'll get medieval on your butt, right? Albini has worked with acts great, Page and Plant, PJ Harvey, Nirvana's In Utero, and Small. You know, anybody who wants can hire out his studio for a couple $100 a day, come in and knock out a record in 12 hours. He is very utilitarian, blue-collar, says, you know, you hire a plumber to fix your pipes, you hire me to record great rock sounds. And indeed, one of the things that's great about Shellac is the way those records sound. I mean, to me, they make records like the best Blue Note jazz albums of the 50s. Even when the group wasn't on or particularly a great group, the way that they sounded just had a magic to them, you know? And Albini kind of favors that old-fashioned recording technique. One microphone in the room. This is what it sounds like if you were standing in the middle of Albini's guitar and vocal, Todd Trainer's drums, and Bob Weston's bass. The other guys are no slouches. Trainer has done some great solo albums. He's been in some really cool underground bands. Weston was a guest on Sound Opinions not long ago when he's now part of Mission of Burma doing the behind-the-scenes stuff. They have all worked in the studio with Albini. They're all masters at getting sounds themselves. And every once in a while, they get together. And some people go bowling. Some old friends get together and play poker. These guys make this harsh, abrasive, experimental noise rock live and on album. As I said, it's been a long wait for Excellent Italian Greyhound. Now it's here. Let's get into our thoughts about it after we play this track. It's called Be Prepared. It's one of the ones that spotlights Albini's vocals and guitar on Sound Opinions.
Don't be afraid, you are born.
I was born wearing pants. Be prepared.
Don't be alarmed. We mean you no harm. Be prepared.
That is Shellac with the song Be Prepared from their fourth album, Excellent Italian Greyhound. This is a band that has tongue very firmly in cheek on a number of songs on this record, and it's terrific when they do. We play that song, The End of Radio, at the outset. Minimalist band in a lot of ways. Drums, bass, and guitar, and they never really veer much from that formula or format.
No overdubs, but, no way.
Within those apparently narrow parameters, they get a lot of mileage and a lot of variety. The End of Radio enables Albini to put on this theatrical guise as the last DJ on Earth broadcasting, making the last broadcast out to a dead planet. And in Be Prepared, again, the tongue firmly in cheek, you know, the sarcasm just dripping from that song. At the same time, they're dishing out some powerful rock music. This is a band that, as you said, Jim, the recording is pristine. No band sounds quite like Shellac simply because of the way they're recorded. You can hear the drums, you can hear the bass, and you can hear the guitar. They're on an even plane. There's none of this compression that mucks up a lot of commercial studio recordings.
And I didn't literally mean they use only one microphone. What I'm trying to say is that's how they play. You know, John Paul Jones always said of John Bonham, he could play a piece of cardboard and it would still sound like John Bonham.
Yeah.
And these guys attack their instruments in that way. Albini has a very underrated guitar sound, hugely influential. I forgot to mention this up top. Through the 80s in the indie rock era with Big Black and followed up with Rape Man, where he first played with Trainer, a lot of indie underground noise rock would not exist today if it hadn't been for the ground that Albini blazed.
Absolutely not. And I think it's off-putting to some people who are used to the very processed, very compressed recordings that you hear on radio, on most commercial recordings, to hear, well, this is what a real band sounds like. I mean, those drums are right up front. They're right in your face. Todd Trainer's a terrific drummer.
Amazing.
You can
hear
every note he plays. Every little cymbal tickle is right in your face. Massive bass sound. And as you said, the guitar playing, there's times where it sounds like a trash compactor. And I mean that with total reverence because he's intentionally not playing blues chords or blues motifs. I mean, he is inventing a new vocabulary for this instrument.
Didn't he credit himself during Big Black's days with guitar sking?
Yes.
That's what he played, guitar sking.
So what we have here is a truly, when people talk about terms like indie rock and punk rock or post-punk, what does it mean? You start in this direction here, folks, and then work your way backward. That's what this band is doing. At the same time, they can tax your endurance.
Oh, they can suck.
There's a track in the middle of this record, Genuine Lullabelle, that it might be interesting to listen to once, but I can't see myself voluntarily going back and listening to that track for another 9 minutes and enduring that. At the same time, there's a couple of instrumentals tucked in here, kind of almost like you think there's this 2-minute throwaway called Kitty Pants, which actually is one of the most melodic things Albini's ever played on guitar. It's kind of this just stuck at the end of the record in this kind of cool contemplative melody, which shows a side of Shellac that I didn't even know they had. So there's some really cool things dotted in this record. It's not a complete masterpiece. I think there are some throwaway things on here, but I would say tracks like The End of Radio, Steady As She Goes, Be Prepared, Kitty Pants, as good as anything they've done. You've got half of a great record here, so I'd have to say burn it.
Well, you know, Albini's never been consistent. You know, he's a polarizing figure. I think he's a schizophrenic figure even within his own beliefs. He would dump all over a Billy Corgan for a 10-minute track, right? Like the new Smashing Pumpkins song, United States. And yet, you know, he feels no compulsion to stay away from a song like Genuine Lullabelle, which is almost 10 minutes long and goes nowhere too. So consistency is not his strong point. And at this point, I think Shellac is very much like a busman's holiday for them. And it's taking longer and longer for all three of these members to come together. It doesn't sound like it was cooked long enough, this album, except the stuff that's really well done, like you said, End of Radio and Be Prepared. I mean, those are just great songs. I wish the entire album was that good.
Yeah.
I think half of 1000 Hertz, the 2000 record that we got from them last, was excellent. Half of this record is excellent. If we put those two excellent halves together, we'd have a masterpiece. As it is, this is a burn it record.
Picture you
yourself in a living room. Your pipe and slippers set out for you. I know you think that it ain't too far, but I hear a call of a lifetime ring. Felt the need to get up for it. Oh, and cut out the middleman. Get free from the middleman. You got no time for the messenger. Got no regard for the thing that you don't.
That is a track from the new Spoon album, Ga 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 Ga, and I'm not stumbling, as I am wont to do occasionally, but not then. That is the word Ga, G-A, five times, apparently a chord sequence from one of the songs on the new Spoon album, the sixth studio album from the Austin, Texas band, led by one Britt Daniel. The band formed in the mid-90s, just at the tail end of that alternative rock era, and has produced six studio albums since then. The core of the band, Daniel on guitar and vocals, the primary songwriter, Jim Eno, the drummer, they have been the two constants in the band throughout its history. New album with production by Mike McCarthy on most of the songs. That particular track that we played at the very top, a track called The Underdog, was produced by one John Bryan in Los Angeles, who we've had as a guest on the show. And you hear the introduction of some horns on that track. There's some interesting sonic tangents for Spoon on this particular album. We're going to talk about them in a second, but first let's play a track that shows you some of the other new directions that the band is moving in. Here's You Got Your Cherry Bomb from Spoon on Sound Opinions.
Life can be so fair, let it go on along. That cherry bomb, blow out that cherry bomb for me. We lost it long ago, you and me. Now you blow your way back from the spirit bomb. Brush your teeth for bed, blow out that cherry bomb. Blow out that cherry bomb for me. You got to know it's on your sleeve. Know it's on your sleeve. Know it's on your sleeve.
That is the Austin, Texas art punk band Spoon with a song called You Got Your, YR period, Cherry Bomb. These guys clearly have a thing with weird titles. The album is called Ga 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 Ga, and it's coming to us from Merge Records, Greg. I think that's part of the key to understanding this. Merge instantly this year became one of the most successful independent American rock labels ever, with Arcade Fire going gold. And Arcade Fire is going to be on our show next week, interestingly enough. And I think Spoon is right on the cusp of breaking that big. After nearly a decade where they've been peddling in the underground, slowly but surely expanding a basic sound, I think very much in a career arc similar to Modest Mouse's, mm-hmm. I think they're ready to explode. You know, they did the soundtrack for that film Stranger Than Fiction last year. Their music has been popping up in commercials. And they've been getting better and better at the same time. They essentially had a very basic, simple idea initially early on. Two big heroes, I think, Talking Heads and Wire, the English art punk band. And it was stripped down. It was minimalist. They were making a lot out of simple guitar patterns, out of that driving keyboard, one note repeated over and over and over again. And, you know, minimalist kind of impressionistic, almost haiku-like lyrics by Britt Daniel. And now I think, much like the Talking Heads and Wire, both of them in 1980, expanded the sound in a way that made listeners hit themselves in the head. The Talking Heads with Remain in Light and Wire with 154, where suddenly people said, oh, now I get it. All that weird angular stuff under all of that. This was a great dance band and one that had great hooks. I think that's the moment the Spoon is at right now, because by bringing in the horns and being groovier than they ever have in a less angular way, there's a lot of Stax Motown soul on this record. Wow. You know, whoever knew that was in them. I think that they're just this is a great, great, great album. It's got me really excited.
Yeah, it's very minimalist in a lot of ways still. It's very stripped down, and yet they've added more instruments to the palette. It's the way they use them that's so unique. 10 songs, maybe 36 minutes. Nothing overstays its welcome. I just love the way they think about rhythm. Everything's a rhythm instrument in this band. The hand claps, the piano, the guitar, the tambourine. Jimmy, you know, I'm surprised you, my drummer friend, Jim DeRogatis, did not just go ga, 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 ga over this guy's drumming.
I've been there since their second album. I've been a fan of Jimmy. You know, he's like the only constant in this band.
Yeah.
It's been a revolving door, much like Modest Mouse has been. I think Mr. Daniel can be a little hard to get along with.
Yeah.
But Eno's been at his side throughout.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the key to this record. It is a very groove-oriented record. He throws those hooks out kind of almost like little teases. He never kind of, you know, you never feel the overblown chorus coming on. But at the same time, 3 days later, you're humming this little hook in your head.
Yeah,
and
he's
got you. And that's what I like about this band. Ever since, I would say, the Girls Can Tell record, and in particular, Kill the Moonlight in 2002, I really, really started appreciating what this band was doing on a very minimal level. And this is a record, I think this is like the third or fourth really good record they made in a row. Sooner or later, as you said, people are going to figure out Spoon's a great band.
Yeah.
And maybe this is the record. It's a buy it record.
Absolutely, Greg. I love this record to pieces. It's a buy it for me, too. I mentioned a minute ago what we have on the show next week. Remind our listeners.
Yes, indeed. The Arcade Fire, label mates of Spoon with the band we just talked about. They're going to be in the studio for a lengthy interview with two of the key members of the band. We're going to be playing lots of music from one of the most talked about bands of 2007.
Good stuff. We got some thank yous to say. Sound Opinions is produced, as always, by our ace team of Todd Bachman, Matt Spiegel, Jason Saldana, and Robin Lynn, with Chuck the intern serving as our intern. and Tori Southside Malaty is our executive producer, our fearless leader, and a man about whom I don't think it's any exaggeration, Greg, for us to say we are gaga.
Gaga.
Yeah, gaga. Gaga.
On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So give us a call on our hotline, 1-888-859-1800.
You know they're gonna get you too. Telephone, 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 telephone.
New messages.
Hey, this is Jake Willis from Chicago. I was kind of bothered you guys put the Bengals Walk Like an Egyptian in your top whistling list, because that's my whistle. That's an analog synthesizer. You should listen to that again. Yeah, I should put Andrew Bird on that list. That's a killer whistler. Great show, though. Have a good one.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch.
Yeah, John calling from Hoboken, New Jersey. Yeah, best whistling moments in rock history. I'm sorry, but I have to, you know, put in my 2 cents. Certainly, Dock of the Bay, Otis Redding. You know, me and Julio down by the schoolyard. Paul Simon, right? And of course, Scorpions, Winds of Change. Okay, okay, I can't believe I did that. It must be the booze talking. Anyway, great show. Bye.
Hey guys, my name is Lance, and I'm calling from Park Forest. Just heard a promo for your show that features great whistling parts in rock and roll. Now, the song is Reba, the band is Fish, and it is by far one of the most, the hottest whistling part in rock and roll. I'm sure there's other ones, but I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but being a Fish fan, that jumped out when you guys, when I heard whistling, jumped out at me. So, maybe you guys can give it a shot. The song is Reba. The band is Fish. My name is Lance. You guys do a great show. Thanks a lot. I'll keep listening.
Bag it, tag it, sell it to the butcher in the store. Oh, bag it, tag it. Sell it to the butcher in the store. Bag it, tag it. Sell it to the butcher in the store. Oh, bag it.
Hi, this is Annie from Chicago, Illinois. A great song that has whistling in it is Mockingbird by Palyard, a Chicago band. Thanks. Bye.
Hi, this is Kathy from Rochester, Minnesota. When thinking of whistling in a song with a purpose, the Good, Bad, and the Ugly theme song will forever be burned in my brain. It expresses that location, the desert, the subject of the good, the bad, and the ugly, and it's just such a wistful song that couldn't help but say so. Bye for now.
No more messages.
To give us your opinion on sound opinions, call our hotline, 1-888-859-1800. We'll be back next week with sound opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media.